This is an example of speech.
All our history of royalty.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have our weekly intro segment, Weak Thoughts, about questionable incorporation in Wisconsin, and Democrats being arrested over immigration protests, also in Wisconsin. A deep dive into the corrupt cabinet of the United States of America, and some further thoughts about Sam Nunberg, the banking deregulation bill, and Utah Republicans rapping, wah wah. Prepare to get royally revolutionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts.
Those innocents from the ivory tower waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to please. So fucking just do whatever you please for the night community.
All right. Welcome to Tell Me What to Think and Weak Thoughts. How are you, Charles?
Okay. Been depressed about some terrible videos I've been watching this morning. The massive starfish die-off in Britain, and the diver in Bali who is swimming through the plastic.
Well, that does sound terrible. Environmental disasters are not my normal morning pick-me-ups.
Yeah.
Before we get into it, I've been told by some of our DNC-approved, high-priced consulting firms that we deal with, Charles, that we should be telling people to rate and review us and subscribe and on all platforms, iTunes, which we are now on, Google, Stitcher, whatever else we're on. Sometimes it's
Podcast Addict.
Yeah, that's one.
I think this week we'll iTunes try to make them.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this week we might try to make the migration onto YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah. We should get around to that. But, so big news for the pod. We're on iTunes. Apple sucks. I hate it.
So terrible.
It's so frustrating. We did that. So that was $500,000 well spent on that consulting firm to tell us to do that. Speaking of Democrats, but in a more positive light, we're recording on March 6th, and yesterday the official DACA extension thing ended, and so there were some, at least in Wisconsin's first district here, in Racine, my hometown, there were some protests yesterday in front of Paul Ryan's constituent office, which I actually was just near the other day when I was going to see Iron Stash speak a weekend or so ago. And, the two main Democratic people running to take down...
Is there anyone else running? I thought it was just them two.
I figure there's always, like, some crazy people, but maybe not.
I'm pretty sure they ran Doc Thomas out of town.
Okay, so it's just those two. Iron Stash, Randy Bryce, and Kathy Myers both were arrested yesterday protesting. Which I think is super cool. Not sure.
And the Working Families Party has already set up a, is it Patreon or GoFundMe, but some kind of resource that you can donate to help pay off the people who got the fines of the people who got arrested.
Can you explain to listeners who aren't from Wisconsin, or maybe those who are from Wisconsin, but at least the ones who aren't, what the Workers Family Party is?
Workers' Families Party, from my understanding, is like a alternate liberal party that's more populist and progressive than the Democratic mainstream.
But they still put up candidates who would be running as Democrats.
Well, there's only two parties to run in.
Yeah.
If you tried to have a primary for the Workers' Families Party, that even if they did get ultimately on the ballot, they wouldn't probably get more than 2% of the vote, even with Iron Stash's fame.
I think I have seen, actually, on a ballot before someone listed as Workers' Family Party. But, I don't know logistically how this is, but they essentially overlap with Democratic Party. So, like, at that rally I went to, there were some people who kind of identified themselves as Workers' Family Party members, including one woman who was a founder and brought her baby on stage, which was, I think, weird, but...
Well, in Minnesota, they don't even have a regular Democrat party. The Democrat affiliate is a Minnesota Working Families Party.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up, actually. Yeah, I mean, I think you see this around the country with local parties in certain states, you know, probably getting together to address more state issues that are, I assume, not being addressed by the broader party. But anyway, so, yeah, that was really cool in Racine. And, I mean, surprise, surprise, by the way, spoiler alert, nothing was done about DACA yesterday.
And he tweeted about it at least once that I saw, like, basically giving Democrats the middle finger for, what, not doing something when he was the one with the power and the ability to do anything, and started this whole problem to begin with?
He is... Sorry. No. He is the king of having his cake and eating it, too. He plays as a race-baiting anti-immigration guy, and then when there's an immigration thing that shows popularity, he pretends to be for it and blames the pro-immigration party, who he critiques for being pro-immigration, for not passing it, even though they're in the minority. I mean, it's... astonishingly just like he is playing both sides. I don't know if he's successful at it. I mean, that's debatable.
It's like,
but
Trump and his best friend, probably John Kelly, beating up on someone two different people, and then Trump blaming the guy that he's beating up for the guy that John Kelly is beating up, if that makes any sense.
No, but neither does the whole thing. You can't make it make sense.
Right.
The fact that that didn't make sense to me is perfectly representative of the situation. Because, right? He should be, like, fighting against DACA, theoretically. Like,
or he
openly.
Should be fighting for it because he has so many illegal immigrants working in his Mar-a-Lago and other resorts.
Yeah, well, maybe this is a little corruption thing, you know. A little helping the business out. So further speaking of small to mid-size Wisconsin cities or towns, you wanted to talk about Beloit? I don't even know what you're
going
to talk
about. Oh,
shit,
that reminds me. Hang on. Let me pause the recording. I got to go get this newspaper. I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, so every week we get this publication, Wisconsin-Illinois State Line News, on my front doorstep that I mostly disregard. Our executive producer reads it just because she loves to look at deals. But, I was reading it. Well, she was reading it and showed me this interesting guest opinion in the perspectives page from Diane Greenlee, the Town of Beloit chairwoman.
Okay.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, the town of Beloit filed with the... Who is it? The Wisconsin... Well, whatever Wisconsin administrative bureaucratic body that is in charge of town charters.
I can pretend you said it, and I already forgot it anyway.
Yeah, so this happened, what, about 2 years ago? And since then... talks between the town of Beloit and the city of Beloit over, like, boundaries and other issues is basically broken down entirely. And I guess fighting a propaganda war, Miss Greenlee I assume Mrs. Greenlee, judging from her age, put this piece out. Town of Beloit Incorporation would strengthen entire region. And she goes on to write about, I don't know, maybe a, somewhere between 700 and 1,000 words. With, you know, such thing with great tidbits like, incorporation will strengthen the town's ability to continue to provide high level of services to our residents and our neighbors. Yeah. So this whole thing is just a huge, huge land grab.
By the town.
And in very, very specific interests. I know we've mentioned her on this podcast before, but this has the fingerprints of Diane Hendricks all over it.
And Diane Hendricks is reminding them.
One of, she's the second wealthiest person in Wisconsin. She is a ideologically conservative, like a Tea Party supporter.
And she, her and her now deceased husband started ABC Supply, which I believe is a national.
A national logistics company, basically.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, don't they kind of do, like, it's like Home Depot, but for businesses?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like
for contractors.
Yeah, and it's like repair stuff and equipment and all that. And it's, I think she's, she the richest woman in the country?
Maybe. I bet Betsy DeVos is probably richer.
Oprah's probably up there, too. Anyway, yeah. It doesn't. She's rich. And so she's trying to make a land grab for,
well, the town of Beloit. Like, one thing that I noticed about this article is that Miss Greenlee, in the third paragraph, lists, throughout its history, our town has involved in an autonomous, robust, full-service community with its own police, fire, EMT, administrative, community development, sewer, and public works services. She goes through this entire article and doesn't say the word schools once. Which kind of is revealing to me, because that's basically what a lot of this is about. Mm-hmm. The town of Beloit wants to be able to, shall we say, control the demographics of their school.
So they're trying to not be a part of the
city of Beloit and its school demographic district. Curve. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's, I assume this is common around the country, but I mean, I've seen,
well,
things
this is
like
common,
this in
like,
Wisconsin, for sure.
In Birmingham, like, was it Birmingham, Alabama, all of its suburbs, like, incorporated themselves for exactly this reason, so they wouldn't have any outside control over their school. Like, where's the, yeah, there's a line in here, I'm trying to find it, where there, she talks about how she's just trying to protect their borders. Oh, yeah, protecting our boundaries is the primary driving force behind the incorporation effort. Yeah.
Build a wall, lady.
She would probably would.
So, what? So let's connect it here. How? Why does Hendricks care about the schools? Is it just like,
well, there's other interests. She's kind of racist.
Okay.
And you can tell from her investment patterns, like, she's fostering what she calls innovation in Beloit, but it doesn't really employ the people of Beloit.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a huge stake in the Beloit Country Club, which is in town of Beloit.
Okay.
And it, the city is notionally encroaching on those lands and could, like, annex, you know, things like that.
Okay, I see.
And the other huge thing
mm-hmm.
is that we have a power plant on the Rock River here in Rock County.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it's in town of Beloit, but they're going to be bringing a second plant online, which would notionally double the amount of revenue that the state and county would incur. But, yeah, it's, where does she say? She goes on a, tries to defend it. Oh yeah, here it is. Much has been made of the revenue sharing from the Alliance Energy plant expansion. Yes, the increased revenues to the town, New Village, would be more than welcome. It would be irresponsible and a dereliction if the board did not move to protect the revenues prescribed by the state. City and county officials who accuse the town of being, quote, only in it for the money, unquote, should take a good hard look at their own motives. Any claims that budget cuts and/or service reductions as a result of our incorporation have absolutely no basis in fact. The town board has offered to delay the one-third to two-thirds revenue shift until after the second plant is operational, thereby ensuring the county will receive no less, in fact an increase, than the same tax revenue they receive today. There it is. Did you follow that?
No, re-explain it to me. So, as soon as we start talking money, I always lose.
So, by virtue of their incorporation, they would be entitled to a larger share of the tax revenues of the Alliance Energy Plant. Yeah. Which right now, apparently, the lion's share goes to the county. And she's saying, oh, we'll generously allow you to get slightly more than you're getting now when the plant doubles its capacity. See, we're generous.
So what was the talk about the cut in services? That's where I lost it.
Well, because the county would lose
a lot of the revenue services. Not
right. Oh. It would be almost be forced to because of this loss in projected revenue.
Oh yeah, man, damn, oh damn. And then of course that would be more money. That would be so. If they had their own schools, do they have their own schools now?
Turner, I think, is in the town of Beloit, but I'm pretty sure that the kids from Beloit can go there now.
Okay. So then if they incorporated, had their own schools, they, you know, and not just school, but, you know, there'd be more revenue per person coming back to the people of the town of Beloit that notionally would not be going to the rest of Rock County or the city of Beloit.
Indeed, correct.
Per person. Mm-hmm. There you go. There it is. All right. Well, it was a fun little talk of local corruption. Well, I mean, not corruption, but self-serving interests. Yeah. But yeah, we're going to have a lot more of that talk later in the pod, so stay tuned.
I, personally, on an ending note, I thought Beloit was better than Alabama, but maybe I was wrong.
All right. I'm actually pretty excited about this. That's my political nerdy side. I think this was kind of inspired because we wanted to talk about Shulkin, who's the Department of Veteran Affairs Administrator, or Director, whatever, Secretary, whatever they call
secretary,
it.
Secretary, yeah.
He's a secretary. He's officially called a secretary. Okay. And he's been wrapped up with some stuff that's been in the news. I know about it because of Walter Schaub, the former White House ethics lawyer.
Office of Government Ethics, yeah.
Yeah, and he's an awesome follow on Twitter. We've maybe talked about him before. And he's kind of big on this one. And we can get into the specifics of Shulkin in a second, but we wanted to talk about that, and then I think you had the idea, like, well, pretty much the whole cabinet has issues.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, let's get into it. Who do you want to start with? Start at the top of the list.
I was kind of thinking, let's start with the cleanest people.
Okay.
Jeff Sessions and Mad Dog Mattis are probably the least corrupt people in the entire cabinet.
So, is there anything about Mattis that we'd question?
Let me open this again. The one thing that I see is that he was a... trying to find which defense company or defense contractor he worked for. Oh, yeah, General Dynamics. He was a board member of General Dynamics. But that's about the most controversial position that he has.
Yeah, and it's probably, honestly, and this is not a good thing, but it's probably hard to hire, not that you have to have a general, of course, for Secretary of Defense, but, I mean, don't all ex-generals pretty much get involved in...
Yeah, they graduate to advanced positions in the national security establishment.
Yeah, I mean, but I think a lot of them get involved in the industry of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, you know, building weapons and marketing them to mm-hmm. our officials.
And even beyond corruption, I mean, it does make sense, of course. I mean, who would know more, I guess. But anyway, and so then Sessions, he's in the news a lot. I would imagine anyone listening knows the issues with him, like his hand in firing Comey, even though he was supposed to be recused. Was there anything new, novel, that stuck out or something you don't think was reported much?
No, just off of his financial disclosure, he's easily the least complicated cabinet official. He has a couple of pieces of property that apparently are used for timber and another farm or something that he owns in Alabama, but a lot of his assets are actually clean. He apparently reinvests a lot of his money into municipal bonds for various towns and counties in Alabama.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and actually downright clean compared to the other people.
Okay, so let's move on to the people with, like, I don't know, like a little bit.
All right, a little bit. Rex Tillerson, I guess, would be the little bit. His, I couldn't find his financial disclosure.
Oh, shit. Go ahead, sorry. Couldn't find his financial disclosure.
No, but he doesn't seem to have any of the outstanding corruption charges that are so typical of the other cabinet officials. I think, what was it, last month? Or a couple of weeks ago, a group of organizations like Crew and some other ethics people in Washington sent him a letter about not recusing himself when he has a direct, conflict of interest from his time as a CEO of ExxonMobil. But that's almost a date compared to some of the other stuff.
Yeah, and I guess with Tillerson, it's, I don't know if to be fair, though, I don't really care about being fair to the former CEO of Exxon, but I think he divested himself a lot of those, of his financial ties to Exxon. So, I mean, he can at least make that argument that he's no longer currently benefiting, but I think when you spend, he spent his entire career
40
with
years,
Exxon.
Yeah.
I mean, so if he didn't have a little piece of his heart still with the company, that would actually be a little weird.
Right, and ExxonMobil has extensive business ties with other countries like Libya and Russia.
Of course, with Russia. All right, so then that's Tillerson. So, nothing too, we don't need pitchforks yet.
No. Then we have Alex Azar.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
He is a... I mean, after Tom Price got kicked out for... being the poster boy of the first-class flight syndrome.
And let's make sure to, just make that clear, is that the first person who had this job as Secretary of Health and Human Services is gone for flight issues. Although it's not even why. I mean, he got approved with the knowledge that he had these financial investments in pharmaceutical companies, I believe.
Yes.
But that was fine. Some flights are bad, but that was fine.
Yeah, I don't understand Congress, but whatever.
Yeah, well, he was a congressman, and they probably, a lot of them are invested as well.
Sure. But the new guy, Alex Azar, is kind of cut from the same cloth. He's not quite as rich, but he is just as much of an industry insider. Apparently, he didn't even know anything about the health industry before he was deputy secretary of HHS.
Okay.
And then he went from that to being general counsel. No, he was general counsel of HHS under George Bush. And then he went from that to become the top lobbyist for Lilly, a huge pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like his training is... Or not training, that's not the worst word. But his specialty is lobbying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
So I have this Hill article open, and quote, "That being said, in many ways, Azar's actions are even more morally repugnant than those of Martin Shkreli." End quote. Yeah.
Are we looking at the same article? I've got a different article that starts with that.
I have a different one, and it's about raising prices of some drugs.
What is it? Oh, yeah, that little one called insulin that some people rely on.
He raised the price of insulin medication, and the article is comparing that to... Shkreli, who did it for if I'm reading
kind of the
toxoplasmosis, some, it looks like.
Right, some kind of not necessarily have. Yeah, more obscure drugs that he could buy easily.
Yeah. And so yeah, this position is now on its second corrupt individual with conflicts of interest. Has he done anything while?
Not that I'm aware of. What? I haven't seen. I couldn't find anything about any corruption that he's particularly involved in, but I have a feeling that's more of the fact that journalists are distracted with other overarching corruption concerns. And
yeah, I think we're going to find that in a few of these, where it's not departments that have a lot of journalists sniffing into them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next?
Labor, Alex Acosta.
Oh, yes.
Rene Alexander Acosta. This guy is one of the richest on paper,
okay,
according to his financial disclosure. He was dean of the College of Law for Florida International University. He didn't get rid of his assets, didn't divest his assets in the way that some of these other people do. But, he got bank warrants from U.S. Century Bank and then a whole bunch of money. Wow, okay, anyway. Wait, no, this guy isn't the richest on paper. It was, sorry, it's tough to keep these Alexes straight. Alex Azar is the richest person. This guy apparently only has, like, a few thousand dollars. But
that's
kind of
crazy,
has,
by the
like,
way, just to step back to that Azar. I mean, as a lobbyist and bureaucrat, one of the richest. I mean, that's not normal.
Well, and the weird thing about, maybe Alex Acosta paid off his house when he moved, but according to his financial disclosure, he had very little money in his bank account, but still had, according to my calculations, about somewhere between $1 and $2 million of mortgage on his personal house, which apparently at least $1 million of which has been refinanced and paid in full. Oh, okay, I see. He rolled it over into a different loan. Interesting.
Okay.
But I don't know what the basis of that is, considering he doesn't have any income or assets that would that he would be able to borrow off of in any typical loan.
Hmm.
Hmm. So yeah, I guess he's not quite as corrupt.
Yeah.
All right. Now that we've gotten through him, let's start digging into some of the more. Kirstjen Nielsen.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, I couldn't find any information on her either.
And she would be one of the ones that, just on the surface, I would think would be. Probably one of the safer bets, just because she's been in government getting security, high-level security clearances for years.
Mm-hmm.
She seems like a safe bet to not have at least glaring things that we would find from internet searches.
Right, her positions that she held outside of the government include apparently a civil expert for NATO, chair of the World Economic Forum Global Agenda Council on Risks and Resilience. Also a member of the Global Risks Report Advisory Board for the World Economic Forum. And I don't know why she lists this, but prominently she lists her status as a volunteer for Trump for America Incorporated, which apparently is a nonprofit. Interesting side note.
She was a during the election?
Let's see, November 2016 to January 2017. I don't even know what the point of that volunteering for that period of time would be, other than to...
Oh, was that an inauguration thing?
Maybe, but it starts in November? I don't know. It's weird.
He got elected in November.
Yeah, I suppose.
She
has her own consulting company, which she says has... no accounts receivable or unpaid client fees, and there will be no consulting while she's at work for them. And then she apparently consults for a whole alphabet of very high, very, well, not prestigious companies, but very valuable companies like Deutsche Bank, Booz Allen Hamilton, Deloitte Consulting, the World Bank Group. Yeah, it's...
Okay.
And then she has about $100,000 in her bank account, and her mortgage is worth between $600,000 and $1.25 million.
That sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah.
For a government employee.
So, not the swampiest of people in here, but...
yeah.
Okay.
All right, who should we go to next? Rick Perry?
Yeah, because I don't really know. I mean, the only thing I know about him since he's taken office is hugging that coal executive, and then didn't they... They came down hard on whoever, whatever photographer took the picture or whatever.
Yeah, that guy lost his job for it.
Yeah.
I think he was a government employee, like the Department of Energy's photographer.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. Okay, so what do we know about him?
According to his financial disclosure, he is not very wealthy.
Really? Rick Perry's
put it up.
I mean... Hopefully he wouldn't be being governor for... I think he's the longest-serving Texas governor ever.
Yeah, I assume. But he also ended that in acrimony because he was convicted of a crime that got overturned on appeal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he's got... not very many assets.
Okay.
Like, he's written a couple of books. He has... Wow, $9,000 a month retirement from the Texas, or Employees Retirement System of Texas.
That's pretty good.
And he's made various amounts of money from honorariums, consulting fees for McKenna and Associates and other interesting people. His sources of income are from McKenna and Associates, Energy Transfer Park. Oh, there it is. That's what... Energy Transfer Partners is Bob Murray's company, the guy he was seen hugging.
And Bob Murray is a, coal
He's fairy. CEO of Energy Transfer Partners.
Okay.
Also, he's made a bunch of money giving speeches to ALEC and their Texas group. He has more loans than most of the other people in the cabinet. Like, over $1 million mortgage on his residence, a $250,000 mortgage on an investment property, capital commitment. What is that even? Oh, he must be invested in that. And then he has a student loan. Must be his child's or something.
I just haven't got around to paying that one off yet.
Yeah. He has apparently one checking account worth no more than $50,000.
And I think it's worth noting that he had no idea what his department did before he took the job. So you have to think, well, why did he get nominated for the job? And I think the coal industry and oil industry ties are pretty obviously why.
Right. He was like, oh, I think we should disband this entire department. And then he became in charge of it and was like, oh, God, we protect the nuclear weapons.
I mean, and it's not just that quote he had from that presidential debate a while back. He was saying right around the time of his nomination, and then afterwards he's like, wow, I looked into it, and this is a really important department. I had no idea. I mean, he wasn't hiding his ignorance, which,
Doesn't Texas have a Department of Energy, I assume, since they make so much of it?
Yeah, but they wouldn't have that nuclear regulatory aspect. Which I think
it's like only a small part of what the Department of Energy does anyway.
Yeah, but I think that's part of what he didn't know about.
Well, he was an agricultural sciences graduate, so.
All right, who's next?
Let's see. I feel like we should save Zinke and Ross for last.
What about let's
get Carson?
Cuz that one's been in the news lately. We can Well, there's two things that he had. So, one, he's been hiring family members, right?
His son and wife apparently have been instrumental in him doing the office. Like, he had that one meeting in Baltimore or public town hall or whatever that his son organized, even though he's not like a government employee or in any way related to the department. And the son also, Ben Carson, put in touch with the Elaine Chao because of his, because his business is somehow related to transportation, and so they're using their inside connections. There had, the article I read, or the author of the article I read, said that the person couldn't find any follow-up, like if they actually spoke, but I don't know, the appearance of corruption is kind of notable.
No, definitely.
And then, of course, he spent like over $150,000 on office furniture when the maximum allowed by the government is $5,000 for new office renovations.
Mm-hmm. And he is heavily invested in the furniture industry. No, I just made that one up.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. He might be. I don't know. I just,
he might be. He's another one I couldn't find his financial disclosure for him.
And that's a real shame, since he was running for, not that he would have won, but running for president. And, you know, just, Trump set, Trump set a tone for all of these people. Some of them follow it more than others, of course, but there's, you know, there's like a trickle-down effect going on here with financial impropriety.
Right, there's some virtue signaling. Like, in the first year, do you think any of those people would have gotten first class or privately chartered planes if they didn't see Trump bilking the government dry at every possible opportunity?
Yeah.
Living a comfortable life on the government's dime?
Well, and just hiring the richest cabinet in history.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're used to.
Yeah, there's like, what, 3 or 4 billionaires in this list?
Well, and the ones who aren't are... I'm not saying they're all fantastically wealthy, clearly. We've talked about a couple who aren't, but...
But they all want to be.
Yeah. I'm sure. The American way. All right, who's next? Sonny Perdue, you didn't have anything. We didn't talk about him yet.
Well, actually, he's kind of clean. I looked into him. Yep. He had a lot of corruption scandals when he was governor of Georgia.
Yeah.
And then
pretty bad stuff. Look it up.
But, yeah, like terrible. But as in his duties as a cabinet officer, member of the cabinet specifically, we haven't found anything.
Okay.
Other than the fact that he owns apparently a shipping company that has rights through the port of Savannah, which I assume imports and exports agricultural products.
Okay. So yeah, he's pushing for a lot of peanut exports, so he can. I don't know that he's doing that. I'm joking again. I shouldn't make up fake corruption. So let's talk about Chao.
Oh, Elaine Chao, Mitch McConnell's wife.
Secretary of the Department of Transportation.
One of the richest people in the cabinet, and probably one of the most corrupt.
Okay.
For instance, she did not divest herself from the stock in a building company who... Let me pull it up here. The name of it. But as Secretary of Transportation, she's going to have an instrumental... Oh, Vulcan Materials, right. She has an instrumental role in determining, you know, what kind of materials are used for which projects.
Okay, yeah. Of course, yeah.
Of course. Her financial disclosure is kind of complicated. Let me just pull that up, too. Sorry.
Which, by the way, this is, again, the wife of the Senate Majority Leader.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling he was, she was picked just so that Trump would have some interest over her. Okay, so let's start by going over which company she was a director for. She's a distinguished fellow of the Heritage Foundation, a director of News Corp, a director of Wells Fargo and Company, a director of Ingersoll Rand, a director of Vulcan Materials. She has a revocable trust. Wait, how is that? Oh, she's a trustee of her own trust. Oh, whatever. She made a salary of $1,250,000 from the Heritage Foundation, about $230,000 from News Corp, $200,000 from Ingersoll Rand, and in a payout of entire balance of deferred compensation plan for directors made about more than $500,000 from protective life insurance.
Okay.
All right, and then she's got common stock from Wells Fargo, deferred stock compensation from Wells Fargo.
Oh, God. Stop saying Wells Fargo so much.
Yeah, she's... like, judging from her income, she's... Well, okay, I will say this. At least she listed all of her income.
Okay, yeah.
We'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, she's at least clear in her financial disclosure form, even if it does paint kind of a terrible picture of her.
Okay.
Because she has, like, what, 15 different companies that she made more than $5,000 from last year?
I think it's fair to say that she and McConnell, you would put up as examples of the swamp.
Yeah.
The quote-unquote swamp that we've heard so much about.
Mm-hmm.
Just a big wide-open bridge between business and and government.
Right, because her family, she's also involved in her family's company still, which is a huge shipping company.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is part of... Which would be relevant to her position as Secretary of Transportation.
Yeah.
She's also one of the richest people on paper, or probably the second richest in the cabinet on paper, with millions and millions of dollars in cash and bank accounts. One thing that I found interesting is that nobody reported any transactions in their financial disclosures. Divesting of assets or selling them off or, mm-hmm. you know, things of that nature.
Yeah. Because that would be a way to get a, you know, like, oh, I divested. Well, how much did you divest for? Who did you divest it? You know, who did you sell it to?
Yeah, did you sell it to your family trust so that you could continue to make money off of that while not having it directly connected to you?
Well, or did it sell for more than it was worth? Kind of like money laundering, like laundering of real estate. Like,
we can talk about with Zinke, too. He's got a terrible case of that.
Well, let's move on to Zinke. I mean, Chow's pretty,
All right, so Ryan Zinke, perhaps the most corrupt person in a cabinet of corrupt people.
The Whale of Whitefish.
The Whale of Whitefish. I really want to go to Whitefish, Montana, as it seems to be a source of a lot of terrible people.
I think we'd be picked up at the city limits and never seen from again.
I mean, in some cases, they seem like nice people, but they also produce Ryan Zinke and Richard Spencer.
Yeah, and that energy company that was involved in...
Whitefish Energy, or whatever it was, yeah.
Whatever they were. Involved in Puerto Rico, and that weird contract, and... Yeah.
Let's see, let me poke this up. Well, one thing to note that... weird money laundering case is that he apparently sold his wife's RV to one of his campaign donors for $50,000, and then he turned around and sold it again like less than a year later for like $26,000.
Yep, there we go. Yep,
that's what I'm talking about. Huge giveaway.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about. That, I mean, yeah, unless the guy ran it into the ground for a year here.
Maybe, but he wouldn't have been able to sell it for even 26. Like, just think of how much value vehicles lose when you just drive them off the lot. You may have just bought a $25,000 car, but you drive it another 100 meters, and it's only going to be worth, at most, $17,500.
Unless you're Ryan Zinke, then you sell it for twice as much to a campaign donor. Jesus.
Go ahead.
He also then would have been the main cabinet head to... he's the one looking into these...
bear's ears and that.
Bear's ears and these changing of how the national monuments are... just the size of them or what you can do in them and around them. He got a little flack for... saying we should drill offshore around the more offshore around the country, and then they're like, but not Florida, right in front of Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
I don't know if that went everywhere, because every other, like, senator and congressman is like, whoa, what? Anyway, anything else about him?
Let's see. He, one of the most obscure financial disclosures. It's only like 9 pages.
Okay.
And he doesn't list a lot of assets. But, okay, so he has an art collection, an auto collection. He has residential real estate that he doesn't list a value for. Like, in 2 different cases, he apparently owns a bunch of real estate in Whitefish, Montana, which, not entirely unsurprising, but he apparently has no value.
Well, that's wonderful.
Maybe I'll offer him $1 for his house.
That's wonderful. Just waiting for the right offer on it.
Right. Yeah, it's... And to go about the Bears, or talk about that Bears ears thing for a second, they apparently found emails from like a month before he made that decision that he was coordinating with the people that would benefit most from that decision.
Which was it oil drilling?
It was oil drilling and uranium
yeah,
mining.
Yeah, and uranium mining, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who's next?
Yeah, so he's great. I think Mnuchin? Can we do Mnuchin? Everyone's favorite.
Oh my god,
come
this
on.
Guy.
People love Mnuchin.
I mean, the biggest, like, not scandal, but scandal was him and his wife Louise Linton at the U.S. Mint holding up a...
Yes, it was meme-worthy.
Yeah.
Bond villain style, yep. They and his wife got attention for having the most elitist, classist Instagram rant. Since
oh, right.
I don't know that wasn't a Kardashian or something, I guess.
Hmm.
So yeah, but what?
Well, let's see. Before he became Secretary of Treasury, he was involved in One West Bank, which bilked hundreds of thousands of people in California out of their homes. Amongst other things. Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the banks in this deregulation bill, which we might talk about later, that is getting better treatment, potentially,
yeah,
in the bill.
It absolutely would be. It's one of those mid-tier banks, but if memory serves, it got bought up by somebody.
Oh, okay.
One bank. All right, so Steve Mnuchin. He was involved in a bunch of the Travelgate controversies.
Yes.
He and his wife went to, like, what was it?
They went to Fort Knox to watch the eclipse.
Yes, right. I was trying to think. I was thinking Fort Campbell, but yeah. And he was like, "Oh, I'm from New York and California. I don't care about seeing the eclipse." Then why did you go there at exactly the time when there was going to be an eclipse and go to a place where there was totality? Hmm. Oh, and then he took his wife to Europe on their honeymoon on a government plane because he, quote, needed secure communications, unquote.
Yeah. Which,
it's like, oh, no, I have to fly in a private government plane. I need to.
The way I understand it is there's some basis in truth to that. The Secretary of the Treasury...
I mean, he is on the National Security Council, or...
But he doesn't need, like, a
Principal's Committee.
Yeah, but he doesn't need access to it, like, 100% of the time. And
Right, and he's in Europe, where we have secure compartmentalized information facilities, like, in at least every major capital in our embassy, and then probably some other ones.
Yeah.
Like, I know we have at least a constellation of National Security Agency bases in England you could probably wander onto if you needed to have a secure conversation.
Yeah, I think, like, the Inspector General or Ethics Lawyer or something for the Treasury Department said, yeah, he didn't really need to do that. So hopefully he's stopped since then. I don't know.
And then he... I think he took a couple of other flights.
I'm sure. Is there just Mr. Burns left?
Maybe. Who else?
No, we did.
It's Zinke. Oh, Wilbur Ross, right.
There's DeVos.
Oh,
okay, we have
Betsy
DeVos,
DeVos,
Shulkin.
Right.
Let's do DeVos. She's fun.
Okay.
She's everyone's second favorite, I think.
She has a whole website. Like, you can go to Senator Warren's webpage, just search for DeVos Watch, and she has a whole website dedicated to, like, just the terrible decisions that she's been making as Secretary of
Yeah, there it is. Hey, I'm
Education.
On it. Wonderful. Wow, there's like a every couple weeks
utility.
There's a different one.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
She is prolific, but she has 108 pages in her financial disclosure. 108 pages. Let's see. Let me scroll through it. Her husband apparently works for RDV Corporation. Wait, Richard DeVos Corp. I don't understand what that is. He's chairman of a company named after him. Anyways, the number of line items in her assets goes to scrolling. All right, we're down to 30 some. Still scrolling on page 40 now. Still scrolling.
It sounds like they were thorough. I mean, they knew teachers would be looking into this, so they were covering themselves, not admitting any...
50.1. So it's about 40-some pages of assets. And, of course, she lists all of the income amounts for almost all of the assets and how much they're worth.
So is... I hear a lot about... she has ties to student loan. Is that student loan companies? Is that... a direct tie or a family tie? Or,
well, the direct family tie is that her family, the Prince DeVos regime in Michigan, has been particularly involved in the charter school movement out there. And for our listeners, anybody, most of the people involved in charter schools are grifters. Yeah. They are outright taking public funds to do things that the public could do better for cheaper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just a way of privatizing another government service so people like her can make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah, and they're changing regulations that could lead to more fraud and predatory loaning in the student loan field. And, yeah, it's just, it's not... She's not acting as a defender of public education. I think would be the best
30,
way to
31, sum. 32. I'm sorry, I'm counting up her endnotes. Because, like, a lot of these disclosure forms, they say, like, oh, we'll put more information about this in the endnotes. And she has about 40 pages of endnotes describing the various companies that she's involved in.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, she's one of the cabinet officials who didn't need to be involved in Travelgate because she always flies on her personal private jet everywhere she goes.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
All right.
Then we have Shulkin, who inspired all this.
Yeah. David Shulkin.
Who's actually the only holdover from Obama.
Worth
pointing out.
And he is horribly corrupt, right?
I don't know what he did before Trump, but he jumped on the bandwagon at least when Trump took over.
Yeah,
I mean, he might have before as well, but
no, that guy was probably involved in that shit during Obama's administration, right?
Well, I mean, I think the Obama people were more careful about things, but yeah, I mean, unless it really was like, well, I have a new boss who doesn't give a shit if I come in late. You know, he just totally changed his operating habits. I mean, I'd imagine there was something going on before. But now, what's been going on recently?
I was actually just looking at his financial disclosure. Apparently, before he became the head of the VA, let me count the number of companies. He is an advisory board member on a bunch of different health companies, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, almost all of his positions involved some kind of healthcare group, ranging from United Healthcare to Spectra MD to Open Doctor Incorporated to Mount Sinai College of Medicine. Or wait, he's a professor of medicine there? As he's making money off of all of this? Wow, interesting.
That almost seems... well, I don't know. I mean, at some level you have to get people who know about the industry.
But, and, you know, professors have to have some kind of outside work, right?
Especially in Wisconsin, by the way. That's another show. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. It's a fine line between, you know, it's hard to not take anyone who's been involved in industry and companies. the problem is, okay, this will be a little bit, we weren't going to do too much, like, opinion, tell me what to think. But I kind of have something to say about this. Because it's hard to not take anyone who's been involved in the industry that this is regulating. But obviously you have to be really careful. So let's take something like the VA. If you have a strong stance that the VA is going to be a single-payer, government-run organization, no effing around here. Okay, fine. You can take someone from industry, and as long as their boss, who at the time was Obama, is like, no, you're not going to privatize the VA, you fucking idiot. Then it should be pretty fine. The problem is when you have now Trump and these idiots who are talking about things like privatizing or giving people vouchers, you know, like, I can imagine this Shulkin guy drooling and thinking of the boards he's been on and everything once that talk starts happening. And not saying he's done it, I don't know what actions he's taken towards that, but there has been talk about it. I know there's people in the cabinet who are interested in things like that, in privatizing VA care.
That was going to be one of his signature plans to privatize the VA. Interestingly, he has the most number of cash bank accounts with, 11? And somewhere between $5 million and $20 million in cash on hand.
Professor money.
Yeah, that good professor money.
Yeah. One of those millionaires professors.
And he's got a lot of investments. Like, okay. Lots and lots of investments in various companies.
Yeah.
Interestingly, apparently when he found out, or when his internal corruption was revealed, he ended up putting an armed guard outside his office on the 10th floor of the VA. It got to the point where he was in increasing fits of paranoia. He kept certain people from getting up to the 10th floor that he thought were trying to undercut him.
Well, we haven't even talked about what brought about the trouble. So, he wanted the government to pay for his trip to Europe, I believe, and importantly, his wife to go to Europe. Mm-hmm. So he
10-day European vacation.
Yeah, right? He made up a bunch of lies and they changed official documents.
Yeah, they manufactured email that showed that she had a legitimate purpose to be there after the fact.
I mean, they had a little husband and wife criminal conspiracy to get around ethics rules.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still there today in that job. I mean, he didn't even deny it, right?
Nope. I mean, how can you deny it? It's obvious. They got pictures of him at Wimbledon.
Yeah, he didn't deny it. And then he says he's going to have... Didn't he use the word purge of the department?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he wants to...
He's bad. He's there's a reason this inspired... He inspired this segment.
Whole segment, yeah.
He's... I think that's probably the most blatant... maybe not the worst in the end, but the most blatant issue of corruption we've seen. All right, and now...
For the coup de grace, right? Wilbur Ross, whose name showed up in the Paradise Papers for how much he was hiding his money. Mm-hmm. And also, as an interesting aside, none of these people are listing foreign bank accounts. If they claim they have any bank accounts, it's a U.S. bank account in cash.
Is that because they think they don't have to because no one will check?
Or you think they just don't have typically any? Well, no, I'm almost sure they do, but a lot of the
especially
times
like
these...
Chow.
Yeah, they'll have front companies, like LLCs that are owned by another company, that actually holds the account.
Yeah.
All right, so Wilbur Ross apparently has huge ties to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring up his financial disclosure, one of the most interesting I've ever read. His financial disclosure is 57 pages long.
Okay.
But the funniest part is that, you know how I've been carefully noting how people are listing like the value and income type
mm-hmm.
that they get from these various investments.
Yeah.
His fucking financial disclosure reads like there's no, a lot of these don't have any value listed to them and no income listed. It's like, fucking prove it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is that just... Yeah, I mean...
It's just bare. Like, it's just... He's got all the companies listed. Like, and they're all... A lot of them start with WLR, his own fucking initials.
Sounds like Trump, looking at that one from Trump. Everything has Trump in the name over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. He's got things like WLR China Energy Associates, China... WLR China Energy Infrastructure Fund, LP. Yeah, Longmen Group Limited, which is another Chinese company. Yeah, and as I said, none of these are listing any income. Like, this guy might be dead broke, but obviously we know better.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he may have been the one rumored to be the richest, but maybe they didn't, you know, there wasn't enough information to...
Yeah, he's strangely prideful of his net worth. Like, he took issue when Forbes took him off its list of billionaires following his divestment of assets to get into the cabinet.
I can see why him and Trump get along.
Uh-huh. All right, let's see. He has over $50 million in cash. It doesn't even list a bank account. It just says cash, over $50 million.
It's in the hot tub.
It's under the mattress. How are you getting interest off the shit under the mattress? Because he's also listing between $5,000 and $15,000 in interest on that.
He just is a walking bank, isn't he?
Maybe.
I mean, I think the before his nomination, the thing brought up is how he was on the board for Deutsche Bank or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Let's look at his board memberships. Scroll back up to the top. Above is like 50 or 30 pages of assets without value. All right, so let's go through the corporations he was on. Investco, he was CEO of Investco, apparently. Navigator Holdings is the one that he's involved with and with some Russian oligarchs with ties to the Kremlin.
Oh.
Let's see, he's a director at Sun Bank Corp. That's one of those companies or banks that had to spend a bunch of money to,
That's the Atlanta one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or no, New Jersey.
Okay.
Bank United. Let me see. ArcelorMittal. He's a director of that. They're a huge metal company. Oizumi Manufacturing, also involved heavily in steel. Oizumi Manufacturing, it's an air conditioner parts company based in Japan.
Okay.
Bank of Cyprus, of course. Navigator Holdings, Aquin.
Oh, that's what it was. I'm sorry, not Deutsche Bank, it was Cyprus. That was his,
the Bank of Cyprus. He was the director and vice chairman of the Bank of Money Laundering.
Yeah. I'm in the money laundering department.
We have the best money laundering.
Come to Cyprus for all your money laundering needs.
Which is what a lot of people do, especially if they even want to make legitimate investments into Russia, because if your investments are in Cyprus, the Russian government can't be like, yeah, that's ours now.
Oh, okay. So it goes both ways, because I know money coming out of Russia goes through there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Well, a lot of the... If memory serves, there's, like, some pretty serious treasury sanctions on some major Russian banks that keep them basically out of the international financial system.
Well, it doesn't keep them from talking to Jared Kushner, but yes.
No, of course not.
In the White House. But yes, yes. There are a number of sanctions on Russian
banks. All right, let me count the number of companies. Well, just on his from his positions, how many of these have anything to do with... steel. At ArcelorMittal is just listed as steel. He's got a couple, 1, 2, 3 auto parts companies, a shipping management, bank shipping services, bank corporation, more auto parts. Yeah. Lots and lots of auto parts. Holy cow. So yeah, he's up to his flapping chin in metal.
Now,
and its use.
But wouldn't that be working against that interest with the steel tariffs?
Well, apparently he divested a bunch of money
oh.
out of them, but oh. of course.
Okay. wait, let me sell all this off, kind of, and then I'll push for steel tariffs.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, yeah, he's, yeah, and maybe he might be the richest one on paper, because not even yeah. Betsy DeVos has, like, he has at least two different accounts with at least $50 million in them.
Okay.
And he makes millions upon millions of dollars off of all of his WLR businesses.
Okay. We don't know exactly how many millions, though.
Right, because these financial disclosures aren't precise in that respect.
Okay. Well, that's been our little tour of the cabinet. We didn't have time to go over the cabinet-level positions. We're not the cabinet, but they're the cabinet.
Right, we don't have time to go into Nikki Haley's extramarital affairs.
Yep, and her pay-for-play politics. Dan Coates' his homophobia. Mick Mulvaney, we have gone over before. Scott Pruitt, ooh, first-class corrupt individual there. Mike Pompeo, possibly tied up with the DeVos Prince private intelligence thing. John Kelly, secret racist. And Linda McMahon, just involved in fucking wrestling.
Can we just say John Kelly is just not just a racist?
Well, now, I meant like when he started secret
oh,
racist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now he's, he'd lost the secret part of the title.
Yeah.
I mean,
the only thing I can say about, like, not Wilbur Ross, but Mad Dog Mattis is that he, at one point during the Gulf War, he was like, I enjoy killing people. Yeah, but I understand that was a motivational speech to Marines, but it doesn't make it any less loathsome.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Patton-type talk, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's...
Well, and he was he was in charge of the 1st Marine Division, which has been accused of atrocities in the Battle of Fallujah. If you remember, that battle started off with four American contractors getting hung up from a bridge.
Ooh.
And then the Marines went in to pacify the situation.
Hmm.
So yeah, there's blood, real blood on some of these people's hands.
And that's not even mentioning the series of mysterious murders involving Betsy DeVos. I'm just kidding. No.
What?
I'm going to edit out the just kidding part, though, and we'll get in trouble for that. All right, so you just saw news that four more Democrats signed on to this banking deregulation bill. What are they calling it? Crapo?
Yeah, the Crapo bill. Is that S 2155?
That's actually what they call. Is that that's an acronym, right? Or is it just?
No, it's named after the head of the Senate Banking Committee.
Oh, there's a guy named Crapo.
Mike Crapo.
I didn't know that.
Of course, Crapo's a politician.
I thought it was an acronym for, like, community regulation and, I don't know, something like that.
Protection, yeah, whatever. Okay, so no, it's a name.
All right, the Crapo bill. So I was just saying that, you know, my eyes and ears glaze over and suddenly become useless whenever I start hearing about money and financial talk. But the one thing that I have taken away is that... So they're changing a bunch of these laws notionally because the smaller banks were not responsible for the recession and the financial crash 2008.
Right, according to their PR.
Yeah, but, well, that's the thing, is that, so they have this lobbying group for community banks, which does include some of the bad actors. So sure, yeah, the really little guys, you know, like our town banks maybe didn't have much to do with it.
I hate to say it, but it sounds like you've kind of bought into the PR too, because those town banks weren't, or they were also culpable. They were buying, or well, not buying, but originating and selling those mortgages, which got turned into those synthetic mortgage-backed securities, which were traded so heavily and nearly destroyed our economy.
So they were sort of like the foot soldiers for it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, this company, or this the lobbyists and banking industry as a whole, is kind of using these poor, apparently abused community banks as... Yeah.
Yeah, I guess my main thing was just going to be that they... I was going to say, though, but even if you are changing it to include some that, you know, whatever, but it's not necessary was the ultimate point.
No.
They're not falling apart. I mean, do we ever read about little community banks folding? Is that a thing that's happening in large numbers? No.
Not since 2010? But 96% of all community banks were profitable last year. I think maybe one closed.
What?
Yeah, so
why weren't they
bailed
out?
From regulation.
Yeah.
Like, because ever since Dodd-Frank came into effect, their profits have just been consistently going up. And this bill, yeah, it's just terrible. I mean, so the one big thing it does is that banks over a certain size, I think it's like 200, or under a certain size, like $250 billion or whatever,
I think,
like, no longer have to report demographic data of the people they're giving loans to. So people who are interested in determining whether or not banks are being racist or otherwise discriminatory in their lending policies will no longer have the information that, you know, will enable them to make that decision. Like, how are you supposed to go into court and be like, oh, Bank XYZ of Little Town has only been, like, say, 73% of the people it loans to are certain, you know, ethnicities, when the mm-hmm. town that they notionally service is perhaps not distributed in that way. Like, say it's 73% white people, and the town itself might be maybe more than up to 50% minority. So, yeah. That goes to show you how much of a problem that could be.
Yeah. Not to step away too much from this, but, you know, this is becoming a recurring theme where we are seeing concerted efforts by mostly the right, although in this case it's spilling well over into the left, but that try and use the power of Congress and the power of the purse to restrict research and data gathering that could be used to prove things that they don't like.
Right, if you don't collect the data, then they can't show it in court, right?
Yeah, well, and we're recently seeing this, though the law was changed years ago, but with the CDC and gun death. And I don't know, maybe I want to have our senior legal advisor on for this, but I'm going to right now propose a Freedom of Research Amendment. Or some sort of, I don't know, is this totally crazy? That research...
No, like an Academic Support Act.
Yeah, like, well, some sort of, like, First Amendment right to research. Although, if we're talking about the government doing research, it wouldn't... Yeah, you'd have to have some sort of act of Congress that...
right, maybe, directs money.
Yeah, and maybe has, like, higher standards for... because it's not just that they're saying... In this case, and the CDC case, it's not just that they're... I think I maybe misspoke in a way when I said they're using the power of the purse. It's not just that they're defunding a study. They are not allowing organizations to study or data gather certain types of data.
And that's the problem with, like, the CFPB. Mick Mulvaney's doing that there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a devious motherfucking strategy. And especially as someone, you know, not that I was in public policy, but just as someone who's, you know, has a science education and is a fan of science and fucking loves baseball stats, you know, it just offends me so much. So much that you're so afraid of the data that your stances and beliefs can't handle any facts.
Means that your beliefs need to be reevaluated, hopefully.
Well, yeah. That message isn't coming across to enough voters, though.
But anyways, back to that bill.
what else do you want to...
As I said, the 17 of 49 Democratic caucus members are now in support. Bennett, Carper, Coons, Donnelly, Hassan, Heitkamp, Jones, Kane, King, Manchin, McCaskill, Nelson, Peters, Shaheen, Stabenow, Tester, and Warner. So places like Debbie Stabenow, our senator from Michigan, which was ravaged by this whole mortgage scandal, which apparently we're just going to rip all the Band-Aids and stitches out and just go back to the old ways of doing things. But what I see this bill as is it's really leveraging the advantages of banks to accomplish exactly what they want. For instance, this PR effort is... Obviously, they have so many banks and so much money, it's very easy for them to create AstroTurf campaigns, even if they just use their own hundreds of thousands of employees to be their sock puppets, you know? They're not... it's not even not even necessarily fake, but... It isn't really grassroots, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and so it's like they're kind of using a pervasive anti-Wall Street mentality to the advantage of the kind of Wall Street of Main Street type of banks out there.
Right. Well, they're almost holding them hostage in some case, to some extent. This kind of PR stance is exactly why those 17 Democrat senators are now in support of it, because it's very easy for them to be politically on the side. Like, oh, we're helping community banks, and this is a bipartisan effort, and it's going to help Main Street, when a lot of the benefits are accruing to the top, 10 banks, maybe?
Yeah.
Who probably don't need any help. Like, Bank of America is getting the huge carve-out, or Bank of America, Citigroup especially, are getting the huge carve-out that they can use muni bonds as underlying assets to satisfy their required reserve ratios, you know, the amount of money that they have to have on hand for the number of loans that they want to give out. Before, it was just cash. You know, cash spends everywhere, but these municipal bonds are not as, liquid, which means there aren't very many people who are eager to buy municipal bonds that you can sell them easily and quickly for their face value.
Yeah. Except Jeff Sessions, as we talked about in the last segment.
Oh, yeah. He apparently is an eager enthusiast of muni bonds, but, you know, maybe good public officials should be customers for that.
That's an interesting point. Go ahead.
What was the other point? Oh, and then the next advantage that they're using is that by changing, basically individual words in the bill from, may to shall, they're leveraging their huge legal departments against the government, so the Federal Reserve is going to be super-duper hesitant to even, tread upon regulations that impact banks, because... In the original Dodd-Frank Act, there was a line that the Federal Reserve may consider the individual situations of banks when promulgating regulation and policy. But in the new bill, that is changed from may to shall. So the Federal Reserve shall consider the conditions of these individual banks, which means if the Federal Reserve, even after their cost-benefit analysis, which they're required to undergo of any potential regulation, even if they do that cost-benefit regulation... or cost-benefit analysis of the regulation and then issue it, they will be stomped on in litigation by any and every bank that has anything to do with what they're publishing, which will keep resources further from regulating the banks that need it the most. Because they have the biggest legal departments, of course.
Yeah. I was watching C-SPAN yesterday, and they had some people talking about this bill on there. And they were saying how one of the aspects of the bill changes the Federal Reserve looking at how much, I think it's cash or liquid assets or whatever, the bank has on hand, you know, to see if it's
healthy.
Yeah. They now do it once a year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the, well, the stress test is there, like, once or twice
test,
a year.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now it's, in this bill, it changes it from, like, to, like, once in a while or something. It was really weird.
Yeah, it changes it from, like, annually to periodic.
Yeah, and the guy was like, no one knows what that means, but it probably won't be very often.
No. Yeah, whenever they get around to it, whenever they feel like it, I guess.
Yeah, whenever a bank isn't paying them off enough. Bribes.
Well,
them.
The Federal Reserve is made up of banks,
well, yeah,
so...
Yeah, yeah.
Which further complicates the whole twisted cycle of regulation and
yeah.
All
right.
There's a lot to say about this bill, and
what I was going to say is that we can come back to this bill another time. This is not one that's being rushed, I don't think.
It probably will be now that
It's out of committee. You think, or
well, and people know about it. I mean, this isn't the Choice Act, which flew under the radar last year and allowed loan sharks to bilk people of all their money. This is now in the public sphere, and people are talking about how there's a bipartisan consensus to fuck the American consumer.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
I'm sorry, we're...
if it fucks American consumer, just if it's rushed, that's all I mean.
Pardon my cursing, I know we're not an explicit podcast.
Yeah, we got to figure that one out. anyway, we have to fucking figure it out, right? Yesterday on all over TV, which I did not partake in because I don't watch.
Yeah, I was away from my computer all day yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a little bit on Twitter. Sam Nunberg, who worked for Trump for I think like 4 years, 5 years.
One of his loyal attachés.
Yeah. Was, well, rumored to be drunk on TV yesterday, going from station to station. He did, I think, 2 newspaper interviews, The Post and The New York Times. Was on MSNBC twice, and was on CNN at least once. And it was, I was trying not to pay attention to it, but I couldn't help. And... he had some interesting tidbits, which I don't know if it's a reliable source for some of this stuff. Yeah, he's saying it when he's on MSNBC, but is he saying these things while under oath? I don't know.
I love how his position changed from, I'm going to defy Robert Mueller, but and at the end of the night he's like, yeah, I'm probably going to go along with it.
Well, yeah. Spoiler alert, the only reason they had him on was because his main... thesis of the day was, I'm not going to go talk to Mueller. What's he going to do, arrest me? And then at the end of the day, he was feeling, accepting his fate and said he probably will talk to Mueller, which was the whole premise for all these interviews, is that he wasn't going to talk to Mueller. So anyway, I think the point that we both shared is that he was kind of, from what I've seen now, kind of going nuts a little bit. He seemed out of whack. He seemed scared, frankly.
Who wouldn't be?
He seemed upset. He even, in one little clip I saw, the woman's like, are you drunk or on other drugs? And he's like, no. Well,
and she said something, I can smell it on your breath.
Well, yeah, right? But he's like, meds? He's like, my meds? And he's like, you know, like, for depression and so, obviously... not because you're depressed that means anything, but I don't know. It speaks to some things. Some folks were commenting that, well, maybe his friends should be worried about him and checking on him right now, because,
And while they may have been tongue-in-cheek, that should have been, like, some very serious concerns, because...
Well, I saw some that were serious.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think it started off as tongue-in-cheek by some people, and it just, to me, it's like, These fucking cable news outlets can't get enough. They're sharks in the,
addicts.
In the blood. Yeah, they're addicts. It's a good way. They're addicts. They're addicted to reality TV Trump news.
Yeah.
It's not even just scandal. It's just
Because, right, like, there's tons of real scandals, yeah.
Right, because if they were actually on scandals, our cabinet piece would have been 2 hours long instead of just one.
Yeah, there'd be a lot more info out there. It's not... Obviously, there have been important bits of journalism done by these outlets, but what's the ratio? You know? CNN has broken some good pieces. I don't know what MSNBC does, but...
Maybe, I assume they just talk about Russia all the day.
Maybe they have too, I don't know.
I hear good news out of Chris Hayes, or good news out of... Not good news, but interesting news out of Chris Hayes occasionally, but that's about it.
Yeah, he...
But he doesn't expressly
come to
Russia.
I mean, maybe individually
like fucking...
these people are fine TV personalities and pundits or whatever the hell they are, but as a whole, as an operation...
You got to question their priorities.
It's clickbait. They're like the bad part of BuzzFeed, not the journalist part, but the clicks.
Tests.
Yeah, they're just. I mean, they invented clickbait. They've been doing clickbait since before there was clickbait.
A term for it, yeah.
I just got a really bad feeling as the more I like couldn't help but see about this guy, and it just. Or even just putting on, and there is a balance here. Like, on one hand, if there's a person who's involved in a major investigation about the president, and he's willing to talk, yes, of course, on some level, you put that person on there. But you have to be careful of those subjects, interview subjects, doing it for self-serving reasons.
Or self-destructive reasons.
Or self-destructive reasons. And I don't think they do enough due diligence. I mean, what the hell has Carter Page been spewing every time he goes on TV?
Why would you have Carter Page on anyway?
I don't know. I trust the newspaper versions a little bit more because they kind of have, you know, they can sort of...
There's more editing that's done before it's put out.
They can
it's
more
not like
easily
you're watching it happen in front of you.
They can fact check... before they've put out the final product, exactly. And then let's end on the funny note of the week.
I was going to say one more note for Sam Nunberg.
Yeah.
There's a video out there
uh-huh.
that somebody put together of the first time he met Donald Trump when he was 5 at a WWE event. He has just such hero worship and joy in his eyes. Yeah, it's out there.
How old is he?
Like 5 or 6 years old.
No, how old is he now? Is he like our age or something?
Yeah, he's our age.
Oh, he doesn't... Maybe I look worse than I think, but he doesn't look that great for...
Yeah.
I guess I didn't look at him that close, but I just assumed he was, I don't know, yeah.
40, 50? No.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. Been working for Trump for a few years.
Really, it takes the life out of you.
Yeah, holy shit. Yeah, he looked like Elijah Wood before he took that job. The funny news of the week. The Utah legislators in the Utah legislature, and their Republican Party there, put out a music video, sort of like like the old Schoolhouse Rock thing on how a bill is made. Except they...
They rapped?
Yeah,
they tried to rap.
They rapped it to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it's hilarious. There's a weird thing, though, where I feel a little uncomfortable, where part of me wants to call them racist. Let's just be honest.
It's super
cringy. It's Utah, and it's... Yes, and it's Republicans... On the other hand, I'm like, well,
it was like all white people, right?
Oh, they were all white. Yeah, totally. Mostly men, though there were a few women. Mostly old, though a few weren't that old. And I don't know, hip-hop's so pervasive. The show itself, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, is 25 years old at this point or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I probably shouldn't be playing the racist card, but it's definitely cringy.
Yeah, it's an affront to the whole genre.
They should be embarrassed just for themselves.
Why would they? Right? I think half of them were like, why are we doing this? What the fuck is this? And some party head is like, we have to get the kids to like us. We like, as if kids, I mean, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, it's syndicated, but come on. How many 17-year-olds are watching?
Nobody. Not unless they're at the end of their Hulu and Netflix feed, and because they've been, I don't know, in bed for weeks because of a broken bone. I don't know. It's tough to imagine that, why that situation comes about.
Yeah, it's...
It's, to me, it was the brightest spot of the week. If you like cringe humor, at least, it's a good time.
If you want to see like 40 people have like no flow, except strangely that one guy who is doing, he wasn't even like going with the rep at all. He was just kind of saying it, and it somehow really worked.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm just going to read this once, and they they just edited that bit in. Well, I mean, I think they even like lost the beat, like. They're so bad that it's not like it like goes on longer and like the end of their lines aren't coming on the snare. And maybe that's getting too nerdy about hip hop, but I mean they are way off.
Yeah,
it's
not a matter of being off tempo like KRS-One. It's just bad.
Oh yeah, I mean they're it's so terrible. They and I think you're right. The people who were I mean, there's like. Put some of them like putting on like hats backwards, some of them throwing up like their hands in the air like they're doing like the like my dad pretending to rap type thing.
Just trying to imagine that.
Yeah, it's cringy dad, white dad humor type thing. And yeah, so anyway, that's
like,
it.
I mean, how much money do you think they put in that versus how much money they're going to have to spend to counteract the damage from that? Well, like, the only thing I know about Utah Republicans is that they are terribly tin-eared, like, maybe not racist, but certainly, well, at the very least, tin-eared.
Yeah. The South Bronx ain't in Utah, so maybe we shouldn't blame them too bad.
Sure.
It's not their fault they live in Salt Lake City. And
I don't know. Hip-hop has taken over the world. You can find MCs and DJs from everywhere now.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we're from Wisconsin, right? So
Yeah. All right. Well, I'd like to remind everyone that our consulting firm wants you to subscribe, rate,
and
review...
And like. And don't forget to share on your social media.
And share on MySpace our podcast. Please, if anyone's out there listening that didn't know that you should do that for podcasts you want to support because you've never heard a podcast before, please contact me.
We want to have you on the show for an interview.
I want to know who these people are. But it's I've now found out. It's universally said. Everyone who does podcasts should do this stuff. And this consulting firm is like, you're really stupid for not doing this. And no one's ever going to like you now.
Wait, do I know this consulting firm?
Well, yes. We each threw in quarter of a mil for this, Charles.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And it's a DNC consulting firm, so you know that we're tied in close with the consulting firm. So that's how they work.
Yeah, we're closely tied to success, right?
It's not
the way that works.
It's not a meritocracy.
it's a kleptocracy.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I'm Peter Elbro. You can find me on Twitter at @bloatednemesis.
And I'm Charles Minnick. You can find me at @green_weird, WYRD, also on Twitter, of course.
And we always want to hear what you think out there. Have a good week.
Goal of peace, days of sunnies, days of rain. Destroy the myths that will break our chains. Break your chains!